All right, this is Casey Ferguson here, Invading Island Radio 92.1 FM. I got Carlos Soria of the Nils joining me on the phone. How you doing?
Good yourself, Casey. How are you?
Oh, man, any better, there'd be two of me.
That's a good one. I haven't heard that one.
Oh, I'm a man of many sayings. What can I say? First off, Carlos, congrats on getting this album out, man. You know, I know it's really been quite a harrowing journey for you guys, and one that was 28 years in the making. How did you get the ball rolling on this thing?
We had troubles after our first album and stuff, so we put out records after that, but they were never like a proper complete album, and we always felt a little cheated, and it was always in the back of our head. And then when Alex passed away, it was like, in a sense, it sort of came back and bugged me. So it was just something I wanted to do to sort of close the book, in a sense, you know. We always felt if we would have had a chance to make a second, third album, maybe everything would have worked out differently, but you play with the cards you're dealt, and that's it. So it's something we wanted to do, and it was like out of respect for the kids after he passed away, and now it's picked up a little bit of life on its own, so we'll see where it goes. We're very proud of it. It took, like you said, it took 28 years in the making, longer than Chinese democracy. You know, we call it St. Henry democracy here, but you know, we're proud of it, and I think we did a good job. Where my little brother's all over it. It's basically an homage to him and everything we do and everything we're about. It's always been about that. So I think it's good. We're pretty proud of it, and I think he'd be proud of us too.
Yeah, I think it's a great record, man. Do you feel a sense of closure now?
Well, yeah. I mean, as far as that, like, in a sense, it's like being able to prove that, hey, we still had life in us, but because of bad record deals and everything that went on, they cut us off at the knees, and we never got, you know, after a killer album, and then they destroyed our careers. So, yeah, a sense of closure in a sense, but at the same time, like, we play music because we like it. It was never about playing music because you wanted to make money or whatever. It's just because this is what we like to do. Probably we'd still get together and jam every week like we do, you know, even if nothing was happening. So closure in the sense that, yeah, we did it, but now we still enjoy playing with each other, and it's not like it's finished. It's like we're just seeing what goes with it. We've got a pretty good reaction so far. Like, I mean, they're playing it here on Shoma on the radio practically every day, and it's only a few months old, and it's picking up good momentum. So, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, I think we still have a few records in us, but it's not up to us to dictate what's going to happen. So we'll see. You know, if people are enjoying it and I'm enjoying it and that works out, then we'll see what we can do. But yeah, I'm glad we did it. In a sense, I think Alex, it was for Alex in a bit too. And I think, like, wherever he is, he's proud of us, and he's smiling down on us. He's probably kicking himself, oh, you little buggers, you know, like, you did that without me. But, you know, everything we did was because in direct relation to him. So, like I said, I think he'd be proud of us.
I concur, man, and I'm proud of you for dropping an F-bomb on Shom. I rather enjoyed that.
Yeah, you heard about that. Yeah, I'm trying to watch my tongue. It was like all day they're telling me, whatever you do, Los, don't swear, don't swear, don't swear. So I'm thinking, don't swear, don't swear. First word comes out of my mouth is a swear word, you know.
Well, that's how it goes. Well, you did the same thing on,
You know?
Didn't you do the same thing on 690 too?
Yeah, probably. I do it because I'm nervous. I don't do it to be like cool or how bad am I. It's just like, I'm always getting nervous and I'm like, oh no, you know, but we've always been like that. We wear our hearts on our sleeves, and which sees what you get. I mean, we want to keep it a family kind of show, but occasionally a few swear words, you know, whatever. Not the end of the world, you know. There's worse things out there to worry about.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. Anyone who's heard my podcast knows that I've been known to cuss a blue streak from time to time, so now that I'm Invading Island Radio here, I'm trying to behave myself, so we'll see how that goes. There may have to be an uncensored version of this interview somewhere.
Hopefully, yeah. Hopefully they'll have us back, you know, that's the point.
Yeah, we might both get blacklisted back, here.
Management's going to hear about this.
Take such a threat? Take a shot.
You got some great guests on this album, man. How did they come to be involved in the record?
Well, in the early days, we had toured with the Lemonheads, and, you know, there's a good connection between them and us. They're fans of us, and vice versa. And I'd seen Evan. Evan had been playing solo tours lately, and he'd come through Montreal a few times, and every time he'd come by, we'd get together and jam and hang out. He's really nice guy. He's like us, you know, he's a true gentleman and stuff. So when he heard about the record, he was pleased. He knew Alex too, so it was all cool. And then what happened was we were all done and we had one song where Mark, our guitar player, had sang it originally, right? But he wasn't happy with his performance, so it just so happened Evan was in town. I said, hey man, would you be into doing this? And he was like, jumped all over. He's like super honored. Like, we're honored, but he's more like, he's crazy, you know? He's a true like music nerd like all of us. He does it for music. He's even gone to tell me, he goes, that's like, out of all the things I've done in rock and roll, that's one of my proudest moments. So coming from a guy like Evan Dando, you know, that's a pretty nice thing. And John Caster has like been a friend of mine since we were kids. We grew up together and stuff. I did the first Asexuals tours with them, like when their bass player chickened out 2 days before they were supposed to go. So we've been friends together, and now he's moved up in the world. He's married a beautiful woman, Jessica Pere, and now he's has a record company in LA. So they helped us to put this out and help us every way they can. He's always helped me out, John, through our careers and stuff. We're good friends, and he's a good businessman and a good guy to talk to people. He knows people living in LA, you know, it helps out to have somebody on your side like that. So yeah, and we also had Peter Edwards, who produced the album. He plays guitar in Grim Skunk. I wanted him to play a few more guitar bits, but I got him to do a few solos, and it's cool. And the guy who engineered it, he engineered our first album, Phil Burnett. He started off his career as a Bad Brain soundman, but now he's like engineered and produced records for like Steely Dan. He's got Grammys for recording Steely Dan, whatever. I mean, Steely Dan, they're very well known for their production and their engineering on records. And he's remained a friend of ours. And when he heard we were making the album, we didn't have much of a budget to pay a guy like that. But he was like, no way, I don't care about money and stuff. I just want to work on it. And he did. So goes to show, sometimes it's not about money and stuff. It's about people loving the music for the music part of it. And when you can have big names like that do it, it proves that they do it because they love the music, not because they're getting paid or not. Just trust me, we all had to take a severe cut in pay in this, you know?
Yeah.
Every bit we did, we put into to making the record. But it's pretty good considering the budget we had. We made it sound like we put way more money into it than we actually did, you know what I mean? So that's the proof of hard work. So yeah, it was a great team that we had working on the record, and the band worked really good and stuff, and we're super proud of it.
Well, it's great to hear that, you know, there's still a heartbeat left in the music business, you know, that some guys are still doing it for art's sake.
That's what's lacking. Yeah, I think that's what's lacking in the music, a music business, a little humanity, you know, all this stuff where it's like they don't want you to be like a band that functions for itself. It's like a factory, you know. They want you some dummy that they write the songs for and tell what to do, and that's it. They don't want you to you know, say what you think and write songs, you know. It's I think we've deviated from that, and that's a shame. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to go back to like the original format of music, whatever it is, to be like about being four guys up there, you know, slugging it out, like playing music and stuff, not computers or rapping over somebody else's record. I mean, that's all fine if that's your thing, but as far as I'm concerned, it's always been about four guys up there, you know, putting their hearts and souls and writing good songs and having a good time, and that will always convey to the people standing in front of you. You know, if they see you're having fun and you're delivering good music, they're gonna react to it, regardless what your level. Maybe we're not as big as Taylor Swift and stuff like that, but trust me, there's still people like you and me that believe in this kind of things, and they show up. And like I said, we never did this for success and all that. It's a very funny game, and we never did that when we started playing. We never did that for that reason. We did that because we wanted to play music. We figured, hey, we'll do a tour. Wow, we did a show, made a record. Every step was like, holy moly, we're proud to do that thing. And then what happens is when we sign that record contract, is the minute you have somebody else telling you, hey, we're going to turn you into U2, that's the moment where you got to be careful. That's where it goes wonky, you know?
Absolutely.
When you have some guy in a suit telling you, like, hey, I can make money off this, it's like, wait a sec. First of all, we should concentrate on making a good record, not planning how much money it's going to make.
Putting the cart before the horse, right?
Exactly, yeah. And music, it's a circular thing. Like, it goes wonky for a while, but every now and then there's always four guys that come along, straight ahead rock and roll band, and they shake up the cage and we go back to it. Like, you know, the Sex Pistols, Guns N' Roses, you know, whatever, go back in time. And we need to have more of that, because we don't want to end up like everything else that gets taken over by technology. You can't replace four guys that are on a good stage with good sound and bashing out good tunes. That's a good time. It's good, clean fun. When you start off thing. I mean, that's how we built our careers since the start, was on being a good live band, because at the time you didn't have any records. You were doing shows. Your first step is doing shows and blah, 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 you know? So that's what made you what you are. If you're able to go up there and deliver the goods, like I said, on a good stage with good sound and everything, all your cylinders are firing, you can't be beat, you know? We're up there with the best of them. And that seems to be not as important now. Like, I've had people in boardrooms tell me, well, that's not important how tight or good you are live. It's how much marketing is involved, blah, blah, blah. It's like, you know.
And there's what's wrong.
F on that, you know what I mean? Like, dude, I'm never going to sell my soul to do that. If I have to give up playing music because, whatever, it's not marketable, then so be it. I'll do it for fun, but I'm never going to turn it to, like, you know, a soulless sort of do this because that's what's going to make you money, you know? Sure, it'd be nice to make a bit of money and to, you know, buy yourself a house and build a studio or whatever, but if, you know, you take what you get and you work it out in the end anyways, you know?
Absolutely. Now, you were born in Germany, but moved to Canada when you were two, growing up in Saint-Hubert, just 9 miles from Montreal, right? So you must have taken in some great live shows.
Oh, dude, I was going to rock shows since I was 15, and when I first started going to shows, it was the first punk movement. I've seen a lot of killer bands. Like, I saw the first Clash tour with the Undertones opening up. I saw the Professionals, Angel of Gupstarts, Teenage Head, and Vile Tones. I've seen the Ramones on the Road to Ruin tour. I've seen the B-52s on their first. I saw, like, dude, the list goes on, like, wow, 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 the Jam. I used to follow the Jam around. I love that. The Clash, too, always one of my favorites and stuff, and Stiff Little Fingers, Bad Brains. We used to go to Fufuna Electriques, which is a very famous club in Montreal. And, I mean, I saw Green Day before Green Day turned into what it is. Nirvana, same thing. Like, I saw them play Fufuna's, and a month later it went ballistic. It's really neat. Like, dude, those are, like, my happiest moments, you know, being 15 and going to see these shows. We were always, like, the young kids on the scene. We had this thing about being the youngest band in Montreal. So, those are my happiest memories. To this day, like, people are like, wow, you said I saw that show, you know? It's like, I saw U2 on their first tour when the Edge still had hair and they were, before they went kind of silly. I saw the Police on the first tour, Joe Jackson on his first tour. That goes on, dude. I mean, I could go on for days, but that's what it was about back then. And it's not like now where shows are like $130 and you have to buy it on a credit card. It was like $4.99 to see, you know, Bow Wow Wow, and $7 to see the Jam, you know? It was like insane. I think now everything is so corporate, you know, like,
I agree.
Rock shows, you know, like, since when do we have to put rock shows with credit cards? It doesn't make sense, you know? That's what I was saying. I think we need to go back a bit to, I understand you have to go along with the age and technology, but we need to rattle the cage and make it more humane, put a little more oomph into it. It's become too safe, too cookie cutter, you know what I mean?
100%. I couldn't agree with you more.
And bands now, it's like, that's what they're worrying about. Like, you know, if I was 20 years old now, I'd be like a rebel, you know, like, go against the grain. But no, most of them are like, oh, we're trying to do this and try to do this and this and that, and people telling you what to wear, like, that's ridiculous, you know? Since when? Nobody told the Sex Pistols or the Clash what to wear, you know? It was like, dude, they went up there in the clothes they were wearing all day, you know, and still look good. And like you said, it was about being a good live band with good songs and hammering them out there, you know? And that's what builds the reputation. That's why people still, I still listen to those records. I know a lot of people do, you know?
100%. And I've said to so many people, I mean, you know, it's unbelievable how little the music business has to do with music.
Well, yeah, it never was about that. It's like, let's think about it. Music and business, it doesn't go together, you know? It's like art. Look at Van Gogh. He never sold a painting, you know, until he died. And now it's like, how much are they worth, you know?
Yeah.
And all this kind of stuff. And now, like, before, the music business controlled everything. Now, ever since we had the whatever you want to call it, you know, it turned around where it was taken out of their hands and everybody went on their own, you know, since the internet and cell phones and like that, you know? Like, think about it. Back in the 80s when we put out our first album, there was no internet. There was no cell phone. CDs had just come out, you know? It was a different time. Record companies came and found you. Now, anybody can, you know, make a little video, put it on the internet, and if by fluke it hits, then, you know, overnight you're like, whatever, you know? But I've always been a firm believer of you should build your house on a solid foundation. So sometimes when it's like too much too soon, those kind of things don't last, you know? And then why do people, like, in case of our band, maybe we haven't achieved like super commercial success, but people love the music, still come up to me, kids that are just discovering it. I mean, to them it means a lot, you know? asking you to sign their records and stuff. That's my $1 million, you know what I mean? And I'm proud of it. People use words like legendary and seminal and you're influential. When guys like the Goo Goo Dolls tell me that they made their career by ripping me off on my first album, you know, like, just like, hey, can you lend me a few bucks?
Yeah.
but whatever, I mean, in a sense, it's, you know, it makes you proud. I mean, it's too bad that I can't take those kind of things to the bank. But like I said, in the end, we never did this for money and all that. It'd be nice if we would have had maybe a little more success commercially and stuff where, like, you know, Alex would have been a little more comfortable and didn't have to worry about other jobs and stuff. And, you know, maybe that would have changed the outcome of things, you know. But we've always had to struggle. And it's always, basically, you always do in life. You know, even when you think you've got things worked out, something else happens and stuff. Like, I even thought this time around it might be easier because, hey, we have all this history in our name and blah, blah, blah. And we haven't done a record in a while. But no, dude, it's sick. You're always paying your dues. You still have to go out and struggle. If not, it's even harder because now you've got 10 times more people doing this, like I said, because of the internet, blah, blah, blah. And all these people are like, well, I'll do it for nothing, you know, where we used to get big, big guarantees. Now you have to take cuts and pay because, in a sense, we are starting over. Okay, we've got this great history. We've got great old albums. But, hey, man, this is a new album that's 3 months old. And you throw it in the ring with everybody else. So, basically, you're starting over again, you know. When I get down about it and some kid comes up to you and goes, man, you're the greatest. I love it. I love it. It's like, dude, that's when I, like, okay, slap myself around and go, okay, you know, snap out of it. Let's keep going, you know. And I'm glad I do this because maybe if I didn't do this, you know, maybe I wouldn't be around. This is, as much as it's been hard in a sense and losing my little brother and all this, but in a sense, it keeps me alive. It keeps me going, you know. It's on a bad day when you feel like crap in this and you hear a good song, you know, it snaps you out of it. You know what I mean?
100%. Music definitely saved my life. So, you know, I couldn't be more grateful.
Yeah, it's a hard thing, but at the same time, it's a great thing. It's like anything. Anything good in life is going to be hard, and you have to work at it a bit for it to be worthwhile. We all know that, you know. You're a man of the world. You know that. Nothing is easy or comes easy, you know. If it did, it wouldn't be worth it. You know what I mean?